Well, it's good to see everybody today, especially those of you joining us online. Yes, we can see you, and those of you who have stayed up late and are watching this from the couch all by yourself, we can see you as well. And for all of you in the room and all of our Atlanta area churches and those of you who join us really literally from all over the world, it's a lot of fun. We're in the third part of a series called Starting Point, and the premise for this entire series is simply this, that faith has a starting point. Everything in your life has a starting point. As we said in the very first week, you had a starting point. Some of you were started on purpose, and some of you were started by accident, but we're glad that you got started, and we're glad that you're here. But we don't typically think about faith having a starting point, but it's true. For most of us, not all of us, for most of us, we grew up in some sort of home where somebody delivered some faith to us, they prayed for us, or we saw people saying prayers before a meal, or went to synagogue, or temple, or a mosque, or a church, and somebody kind of worked with one of our parents or both of our parents to give us a foundation for faith, you know? And then we grew up, and many of us outgrew it. And there was a space, there was a discrepancy between what we were taught as a child and what we experienced as an adult. And we had questions, and our Sunday school faith and our childhood faith just didn't match our adult experience. And it's not that we chose to abandon faith. It just sort of got lost in the rearview mirror, and life kind of went on. And every once in a while, we would think about it and try to match up what we were taught as children with what we experienced as adults, and it just didn't match. So here's what we've done in this series. We've asked this question. What would it look like to start all over? What would it look like to start all over with faith, to have an adult starting point for faith, to start our faith or to restart our faith all over as an adult? If we kind of, you know, wipe the slate clean and start it over, what would it look like? What would be the questions that we would ask? And so in this series, that's exactly what we're doing. And we're kind of building week by week, which means if you missed week one or you missed week two, you really need to go back and watch or listen, because each of these pieces is going to come together in the end, but you got to have all the pieces. And the good news is if you missed last week or the week before, you can go to startingpointseries.com and these messages will all be up there for as long as there's an internet. You tell your friends about it and catch up, watch them again if you didn't think it was, you know, clear the first time. Or if you fell asleep, you know, because you're staying up late, you can watch and catch up with what you missed out on. Now, moving forward, here's another thing we don't think too much about. We don't think too much about faith having a starting point, but I think one of the things that very few of us think about, because you're busy raising kids and having jobs and trying to get married and all the kinds of things that consume our time, that actually the story of faith has a starting point. The story of faith has a starting point. That every faith tradition, every major faith tradition, and you have either embraced a major faith tradition, or you have embraced a spin-off of a faith tradition, or you were raised in one of those, or you may have put it, again, you may abandon all of it. But what you were taught as a child, whatever your faith tradition has, every faith tradition actually has a story behind it. It has some history. But the truth is, and it's okay to admit this, most of us are not very interested in the history. When it comes to faith and when it comes to God, here's our question. Not how did it begin, and you know, who was the founder of my faith? We could care less. What we want to know is, okay, it is Thursday, and I've been asking God for a date since Monday. Where's God when I need him, right? You know, I have a test tomorrow, and no, I didn't really study, but I was told if you know, and you're looking through your whatever your book is, you know, trying to find a promise of God about, you know, school, and it's not in there, so you're making one up. It's like, God, here's what I need to know. Can I deal with you? Can I bargain with you? Will you cut me some slack? I want to know what God can do for me now, right? I don't really care about history, which is part of the reason that some of you, not all of you, but part of the reason that some of you drifted away from your foundation, because you didn't know what the history was of your faith. So today, we're going to go back in time, and I want to tie something that each one of you and each one of us has struggled with in our current faith experience. I want to tie it back to something that happened a long, long time ago, so that as you're making up your mind, as you're considering a restart, as you're trying to figure out how do you hit the restart button on faith, you can factor this in, because it's extremely, extremely important. Now, here's something else you've heard and maybe haven't thought about in a long time. The three largest faith traditions all had the same starting point. Did you know that? The three largest faith traditions, Islam, Christianity, Judaism, all had the very same faith starting point, had the very same starting point. All three of those big traditions believe that there is a single God that created the heavens and the earth, goes by different name, but pretty much God. All of those faith traditions believe that the first man on earth was named Adam. I don't know if you knew that. The prophet Muhammad believed that taught that Adam was actually the first Muslim, and that he was also the first prophet. In Judaism, Adam was the first person, Adam and Eve, and the whole Garden of Eden. Christians also take the story of Adam and Eve seriously, but the reason Christians take it seriously is not because it's in the book of Genesis necessarily. The reason Christians have taught that story is because Jesus actually mentions Adam and Eve. And Christians are kind of crazy in this way. We just believe that if a man can predict his own death and resurrection and pull it off, we just go with whatever he says. Okay? So if Jesus says Adam was alive, we just go with that, okay? But the point is, all three of the big major, you know, traditions, faith traditions, believe there was a creator, created the world, there was like a first person that God created, and they all believe that somehow humanity messed up this incredible creation that God created. That God created essentially a perfect world, and then human beings started making decisions and messed the whole thing up. Now, you may not believe in the Adam and Eve story, or you may believe it's a myth and it explains, you know, human behavior, but here's what we all agree on, if you were here last week especially. What we all agree on is that we have messed the world up. In fact, last week I kind of poked at you a little bit and kind of prodded you a little bit and said, hey, you can't think of yourself as a what? A what? A mistaker. That's right. It's worse than that. You might be a sinner, yeah, that's right. And we said, for those of you who weren't here, it's like, no, I don't believe I'm a sinner, I believe I'm a mistaker. And last week we discovered that some of us make the same mistakes over and over and over on purpose. What do you call that? We decided we'd just call it what it is. We're sinners. So somehow the world has gone wrong and the world has gone bad, and all the faith traditions believe it started off good, that God created it, and then that somehow we made decisions that kind of screwed up everything. And then the other thing where all the major faith traditions come together on, they come together around a single man. They all believe that around this single man and in God interacting with this single man, that God began to correct the ills of this world and that God began to correct what man had messed up. And his name, you would probably guess, is Abraham. Abraham. Now, Abraham is where the three traditions come together, and Abraham is also where the three world traditions also separate. At Abraham, Islam goes in one direction, Judaism goes in another direction. At Abraham, Judaism goes in one direction, and then some hundreds of years later, Christianity sprouts its own wings and goes in a completely different direction. But Christianity, Judaism, and Islam all look back to Abraham as kind of our father and kind of our founder, and that God began to intersect with mankind in a strategic way, again, to fix the problem of sin and disobedience and corruption in the world. Now, all that's interesting, and we're going to talk about how all that, you know, kind of goes with history and all that stuff. But here's why I'm bringing it up. It's not because I want you to believe in Adam and Eve, although, you know, that's up to you. It's not even because I want you to believe that the Genesis account of Abraham is something that's inspired or even true. You can figure that out on your own. The reason we're going to talk about this is because there is a conversation recorded in the book of Genesis between God and Abraham that, regardless of what you believe about the Bible and regardless of where you are in your faith, touches on a tension that you have felt and that you have wrestled with and that perhaps you're wrestling with even today based on your childhood faith tradition and based on the question that we all ask at some point, which is, if there is a God, how are we doing? Where do I stand with God? And can God hear my prayers? And does God care? And can I ever know? Can I ever have peace? Can I ever have any security about the future? I mean, how do I know where I stand with God? And in this little conversation we're going to look at in just a minute, there's a statement. There's a single statement that's so perplexing and so powerful. I want to leave it with you to wrestle with as you think about restarting your faith. So basically, Abraham isn't just a historical figure. There's an Abraham and you side of this story. Now, to get there, I want to tell you a modern day story to kind of create the context for the dilemma that God had and why Abraham was someone that God paid any attention to. This happened a few months ago at my house. I was in my office working, and I had a friend over from staff who was helping me on my computer, because like many of you, I try to fix things, and then when I finish fixing them, they're worse than when I fixed them. Do you ever do this? I just believe I can take a computer apart and put a hard drive in, and so I had tried that with little itty-bitty screws, you know, and I broke a computer. So anyway, I'm pretty much going to fix my network at my house, and by the time I finished, it was a disaster, so I finally called an IT guy over, and we're sitting in my office. I hear my daughter in the kitchen, where she's the only one home other than me. And as I'm sitting there with him, suddenly I hear a sound similar to this. Now, when you're at home and you hear any unusual sound at all, our minds all do the same thing. It starts faster than we could say it. We start running through the options. What could that be? And at first I thought she dropped a glass. Then I thought she dropped two glasses. Then I thought maybe she just brought a bag of glass into the house and dumped it on the counter and the floor. Because literally, it went on and on and on and on. That might have been a slight exaggeration, but it went on and on and on. And I mean, it went on and on long enough for me and this guy to look at each other like, what could that be? And then thinking it's over, and there was more and more and more. So I run in the kitchen, and there's my 17-year-old daughter standing behind the kitchen counter, barefooted, and there is glass everywhere. It is a sea of glass. And what had happened is, and I look at her, and she said, "Dad, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Dad, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." And there are several points of blood trickling down her legs. Later, there would be 7 Band-Aids, but no stitches involved in this. So there's blood trickling down her legs. She said, "Dad, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry." And I look up, and the top shelf has tilted off of its little 4 little brass things that are supposed to hold it. All those glasses came off. The glasses off the next shelf, and half the glasses off the next, onto the granite countertop, shattered all over the floor, and she's standing there bleeding barefooted. Yeah. And I looked at that cabinet, and I looked at that mess, and I pointed my finger at her. And I said, "I can't believe that you did that. And you can just stand there and figure out how to get out of this mess yourself. Serves you right. You should have been more careful." I grabbed my buddy. I said, "Let's go back in the office and figure out network. And you can just stand there and bleed." What are you laughing at? Now, here's the thing. We'll move on. Some of you think that's what God is like. Some of you feel like that God every once in a while stares at you in a mess of your own making, your own little sea of glass with all the damage and all the consequences of your decision. He goes, "Well, there you go. You just figure it out. I'll be in here if you need me. Call me when you get this mess cleaned up that you make." Because you got to clean up what you mess up. And yet, for those of you who every once in a while think God is like that, you don't believe for a moment that I left my own daughter standing in her little sea of glass. Which means you believe that I have more compassion than God. Which makes me more compassionate than God. Which makes me more godly than God. Which is not true. Which means perhaps there's something about God that you don't know. So I did what any good father would do. I said, "Don't move, don't move, don't move." And then I had a decision to make, because here is a huge mess with my daughter trapped in the middle, and somehow I had to rescue her. And so I did what you do whenever there is a mess that you don't even know how to begin cleaning up. We've all had one. I took my foot and I slid the biggest piece of glass out of the way, and then the next one, and then the next one, and I crunched, crunched, crunched over the smaller shards of glass. I turned around. I said, "Just climb up on my back." And then I crunched, crunched, crunched my way out of our little sea of glass, out of her mess, set her on a stool, went and got a box of Band-Aids, and 7 Band-Aids later, she was okay. And then I went back over to this huge mess. You ever had a mess so big you don't even know where to start? Ever spill paint, you know? Ever had your dog get into something, and you just think, perhaps we should just sell the house? Because I don't know where even to begin cleaning up this mess. Now, in a similar way, mankind had so polluted the world. We think about injustice in our world. We cannot even imagine the injustices in the ancient world, where there was no law, there was no civil society. It was, you know, survival of the fittest and survival of the richest. Where slavery wasn't a second thought, where kidnapping was commonplace, where if you wanted someone, you just took them, where there were no city states and no nation states in the way that we think of them now. In a very, very chaotic world where it was unimaginable, and it would be so offensive to our modern sensibilities. Into that world, God stared and realized that sin had taken hold of humanity. And if he was a God who cared, and if he was a God who was compassionate, he had a decision to make. Do I wade into this mess and try to find a starting point for cleaning up a mess that someone else has created? Or do I hang just a big out of order sign over the earth and go do something else somewhere else? And all the major faith traditions believe that God decided to wade into the mess of humanity, and that he waded in by choosing a single man, Abraham, and he started there. So, around 1876 BC, God interrupted humanity, and he chose a man, Abraham, as his starting point for fixing the mess that we had made, that humanity had made of the planet. It's so interesting because Abraham was such a normal guy. He wasn't some super righteous guy. In fact, he had some real issues. And one time Abraham was going through Egypt with his wife Sarah when she was young and beautiful. And some of Pharaoh's servants saw Sarah and told Pharaoh, and Pharaoh saw her somehow and said, I want her. That's how it worked. Go get her for me. So they went to Abraham and they said, is this your wife? And Abraham saw it coming. And he realized, so if they think I'm married to her, then, you know, they take my life and they take my wife. They take my life and they take my wife. So Abraham, being the courageous man of God that he is, said, you know, she's not really my wife. She's more like a sister. You can have her. And he gave his wife to Pharaoh. Now, you think you have some loyalty problems in your relationships. Imagine that. I'll just get another one. That's Abraham. That's the hero of the story. Read the rest of the story for yourself. It's interesting. He had all kinds of problems. He had all kinds of issues. He was so normal, but God had to start somewhere. So God picks imperfect Abraham. And here's what he said to him. This is the story is found in the book of Genesis. The Lord said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land that I will show you. In other words, I want you to abandon and leave your whole circle of influence. And I realize you don't have any kids. And I realize Sarah is so old by this time that she's probably not going to have any kids. And I want to isolate you. Because Abraham, I'm starting over. Abraham, I'm doing something new. I'm starting something that's ultimately going to impact the whole world. And I've chosen you. And don't ask me why. I just had to start somewhere. And then he made Abraham three interesting promises. Now, when I go over these, understand, I'm not asking you to believe that any of this is true. I just want you to listen because it's certainly curious, even if you don't think it's true. Listen to these three promises that God made Abraham as recorded in the book of Genesis. Number one, I will make you into a great nation. That came true, you know. The nation of Israel says, we're that great nation. The Arab nations say, no, we are those great nations. And there's an argument over which great nations were referred to here, but here's the one thing nobody argues over. Many nations came from the man Abraham. This promise by God to Abraham made almost 4,000 years ago absolutely came true. Now, the interesting thing about this promise is this, that God was about to address a big problem, sin and disobedience and corruption in the world. And yet he started with a man. And he basically said, I'm going to make you into a nation, which means first I'm going to make you into a family and then a nation, to which Abraham could have raised his hand and said, you know, that's going to take a long time. That would be like you calling 911 and somebody answering and saying, as soon as we get the engine put back together, we'll be there. So God has a problem on his hands and he picks a man and he says, one day, someday, you're going to be a nation and I'm going to build a nation, and through the nation, I'm going to do something significant in the world. Listen to what else he promises. Promise number two. He says this, and I will bless you and I will make your name great. Now I want to do a quick survey, and everybody at home has to play along, okay? Here's the survey. If you had heard of Abraham, if you'd heard the name Abraham, the Abraham I'm talking about, before the message today, would you raise your hand? You'd heard of Abraham. Yes, that's all of us. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? How about this guy? Cheddar Leomer. Anybody here know who Cheddar Leomer is? Now, this is amazing. Now, play with me. Cheddar Leomer was actually a famous king. He was the king of Edom. No? Could you find Edom on the map? No, it doesn't exist anymore. There's a dirt there, but there's no Edom, kingdom of Edom. Cheddar Leomer, everybody in the day of Abraham knew who Cheddar Leomer was. You've never heard of him. Isn't that interesting? So God says to a nobody, I'm going to make your name great. And he says to King Cheddar Leomer, sorry. And here we are some 4,000 years later, halfway around the world in a different language, in a different culture, and just about everybody in this room goes, oh yeah, Abraham. I know who Abraham is. It's curious, isn't it? Third promise, he says this. He said, and all the peoples on earth are going to be blessed through you. All the peoples, not people individuals, but all the peoples, all the people groups are somehow going to be influenced, or literally, they're going to be better off because of you. And the Muslim nations would say, and that's us, that all the Muslims and all the Muslim nations are better off because of Abraham. And all the Jewish people who ever lived say, all this refers to the Jews. All the Jews and everybody that the Jews have made better and richer and more famous and more successful, they've all been blessed because of Abraham. And all the Christians say, no, 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 it's talking about us. Because everything that Christians have touched that made better, and all the people who've been blessed by Christians and orphanages and hospitals, and all the people that have been touched by Christianity, they're better because of Abraham. To which I think God would say, well, that was my point. That all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. Aren't those interesting, ancient coincidences? There's no one that even comes close to touching our world the way that Abraham does. And it's so interesting that all three major faith traditions say, he's ours. No, he's ours. No, he's ours. But that's the history part. Now for the personal part. This is the amazing part. Abraham's getting older, and God says, I'm going to make you a nation. The whole world's going to be blessed through you. And now he's an old man, and he has no children. And he realizes that if he dies, that his inheritance and everything he owns doesn't go to a relative. It goes to Eleazar, another guy you haven't heard of. Eleazar was his chief servant. And everything was going to go to Eleazar, and he's going, okay, God, okay, you've promised you're going to make me a nation. I don't even know what a nation is, but that sounds big, okay? And God, you said you're going to, everybody on the earth is going to know my name, and so far, you know, there's about 12 of us. And God, you've said that everybody's going to be blessed through me, and God, I don't even have a son. I don't even care about being a nation. I just want a son. I don't want to leave everything to my servant, Eleazar. And so he's praying one night, like many of us pray, in desperation. And here's what the writer of Genesis says that God said to Abraham. He said, then the word of the Lord came to him, Abraham, and God said, this man, Eleazar, will not be your heir, but a son is your, but a son who is your own flesh and blood will be your heir. In other words, Abraham, don't worry. You're going to have a flesh and blood heir. And then he said this. And then he took him outside. He said, Abraham, go outside. And he said, this is so cool. He said, look up at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Now for us, for those of us who live in Atlanta, Georgia, or a large city, this isn't meaningful. You look up at night at the sky and you go, there's five. Ah, one of them's a jet. There's four. Oh, that's Mars. We're down to three. I don't can't see any stars, okay? But in this huge Middle Eastern sky that just stretches from horizon, you know, all the way around to horizon, everywhere he can look, it's the Milky Way. I mean, it's white with stars. And God says, see all those stars? Count them if you can, knowing he couldn't count them. And look what he says to Abraham. So shall your offspring be. I know you don't have a son. I know you don't have an heir. But Abraham, I want you to trust me with something you're going to have a hard time trusting me with. You are going to become a great nation. There will be more people who come from you than you'll ever know and than will ever even be able to be counted. And then something amazing happens. This is the personal part for you and for me, for all of us. You listening? Then the Bible tells us, Genesis tells us, the writer of Genesis makes a statement that's so powerful and so personal. I'm telling you, you've heard this before, maybe you've read this before, maybe you've never read this before, heard this before, but I'm telling you, it can just go by in a second and you would just keep reading if you were just reading the book of Genesis on your own. This statement is so significant, and here's what's amazing to me, as someone who loves to study these things. It's amazing to me that it survived 4,000 years. This is an ancient text. 4,000 years. It's just a statement. And it has such incredibly profound implications for every one of you, for every one of us, because in this statement, God, as best we can tell, for the very first time in recorded history, states the nature of the relationship between God and man. It's as if someone said, how in the world can someone as finite and small and as short-term as me have a relationship with Almighty God? Is it even possible? And in this next statement, God defines the terms of relationship between God and man. A question that you've asked in your own way many times. Can I know? Can anyone know? You used to think you could know when you were a child, and then some things happened as an adult and you decided you can't know. Then you hear people say they know and you think, well, I don't think you can really know. And then secretly in your heart, you wonder, can you know? Can I know? Can I know where I stand with invisible, silent, God? This statement is so powerful. This is where Christians and Muslims and Jews all go in three different directions. This is a statement that honestly, none of the three major faiths, none of them embraced wholly and fully without adding to, because it's so unbelievable and it's so unbelievably simple. It is too good to be true. This was before the Ten Commandments, hundreds of years before the Ten Commandments, before the law, you know, 2,600 years before Islam, 2,000 years before Jesus, before Moses, before any of that. God says to Abraham the following. And Abraham believed the Lord. This is what's recorded for us. And he, God, credited it to him as righteousness. And Abraham believed the Lord. I have no children, and I'm going to have descendants as plentiful and as many as the stars in the heavens. Okay, I trust you. And in that moment, in that solitary, single expression of faith, God reckoned, was the word I grew up with, or credited to Abraham, a righteous standing with God. In a single moment, in a single expression of faith, God said to Abraham, I am giving you the gift of a right standing with me. That little incident in Egypt with your wife, that was just embarrassing. I'm not holding that against you. That whole thing to come about your wife's servant, and we're not even going to go there. Abraham, I accept you because you believed and trusted in me. Wow. Another way of saying it is this, that trust in God resulted in a right standing with God. That trust in God resulted in a right standing with God. This is the first implication that a human being can have a right standing with God. And how did it happen? Faith. Trust. And here's the interesting thing, and I'm not trying to be critical, I'm just trying to take us all on a journey together. Years would go by and the Jews would come along and they would miss this. They would say, no. The way you have a right standing with God is by being Jewish. We are God's chosen people. We are God's called people. In fact, by the time Jesus showed up, a couple thousand years later, the Jews said to Jesus, hey, we don't need you. We are Abraham's sons. We are Abraham's daughters. It's enough. It's enough to be the child of Abraham. And all of you Gentiles, if you want to be right with God, all you have to do is become Jewish, and we'll let you kind of be grafted in, and then you can be Abraham's sons and Abraham's daughters. It's all about who you're related to. And then years you would come by, 620-something A.D., 600-something years after Jesus, the prophet Muhammad would come along and say, no, the way that you have a right standing with God is that you must believe in the one true God, and you must believe in his prophets, and you must do works and acts of righteousness. And at the end of your life, your good works will be measured against your bad, and Allah will determine if you have a righteous standing. And Allah will determine, God wills it, you won't know till the end. It's what you believe, and it's what you do that counts. And then about 30 minutes after Jesus left the earth, the Christians started arguing about this. And one group said, oh, they got to become Jewish and keep the whole law of Moses. Another group said, they can't keep the law of Moses. They don't know the law of Moses. Somebody said, I think you just have to believe. And they said, believing is too difficult. And right on through the Reformation, the church has been split over this issue of how do you have a right standing with God? How do you know when God says you're approved? How do you know when God says, I love you, you're fine? How do you know when you've done enough, when you've believed enough, when you've been related enough? How do you know and can you know? Is it birth? Is it behavior? Is it belief? Is it a combination of two or three of those? When 4,000 years ago, before any of those religions existed, before there was anyone who considered themselves Jewish or Muslim or Christian, God revealed to Abraham the secret. And it's almost impossible to comprehend that the Most High God, would make the standard so simple. That the Most High God would put the bottom rung on the ladder so low. That the Most High God, who saw each of us in our own sea of glass, in a mess of our own making, disobedience that complicated our own lives, regardless of what we believe theologically, regardless of what we believed about sin, we've all been in a place where we have created our own mess, and we wonder, dare we call on God to help us? That very same God said, the key, the formula, the way that you enter into a relationship with me where I call you righteous and approved, it's not through who you're related to. And it's not through your behavior. It's simple. It's trust. It's will you trust me? It's will you do what Abraham said, did? Will you simply say, it's hard to believe. It's almost impossible to believe. But I'm going to trust that what you say is true and that you'll do what you've promised to do. And almost everyone has missed this. And God made it so simple. And I believe he made it so clear. So here's the question. And we're going to stop. What if? What if? What if the starting point for a relationship with God is simply trust? What if what we saw with Abraham and God at the start, where God decided to wade into that sea of glass, where God looked at this big mess on the world in the world and decided, I've got to start somewhere. I'm going to pick one unrighteous man, and I'm going to connect with him in a personal way, and all I require is that he say, God, I trust you. What if that's it? Now, let me tell you what. This is hard. This is hard. It's hard because of the way you've been raised. It's hard because of what you've heard from people like me. It's hard because of what you heard in temple and in mosque and in synagogue and in church. It's hard because of what you've read. It's hard because of what's been laid on you. There's no other place in the world where you can be unconditionally loved and accepted simply based on trust. It didn't happen in school, did it? Didn't happen on the sports field. Didn't happen at work. And for many of us, it didn't even happen in church. And yet when we go back, pre-Christian, pre-Jewish, pre-Islam, and find the one man they all want to take credit for. God said to Abraham, I declare you righteous because you trusted in me. What if the starting point for our relationship with God is as simple as trust? Now, here's what I want you to do. For those of you in group, I'm going to give you a question. For those of you who ride home with people, I'll give you a question. For those of you who are going to lunch, all you college students, you got to wrestle with this because you're smarter than me and you got lots of, yeah, but what abouts, but what abouts? And I'd love to hear those in one consolidated email, okay? Seriously, I mean, this is a big deal. Now, so here's your homework question. Here's what I want everybody to talk about in small group, community group, whenever you want to. Here's the question. Ready? Which of the following best reflects your view? Now, before we go over the question, understand, not what reflects your view now, because I've convinced you, right? Right? But I mean, shake this off. You know, you're going to get in your car and turn on the radio and go, whoo, he almost had me there. But, you know, it was just, whoa, it was just that music and almost fell for it. Okay. So I don't want to convince you. Honestly, this isn't about convincing you yet. We're just talking together. We're having a conversation where I'm the only one with a microphone. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, so here's what I want you to do. I just simply want you to ask the question, which of the following best reflects your view and why? God accepts me based on my birth. I'm connected somehow, you know, relationally to something or someone. God accepts me based on my behavior. God accepts me based on what I believe. Or a combination of one of the three above. I want you to have that conversation. And I don't want you to try to convince yourself of something. I just want you to even think about this on an emotional level. Is it easy for me to embrace the idea that maybe it simply is faith? Or is it that's just too, does it need to be faith and? Which model did you grow up with? Which model feels most comfortable? Which model have you sort of been intentionally or unintentionally leaning into? And then next week, we'll come back and we'll pick up the discussion right there. Let me pray for you. Father, thank you so much for preserving this ancient text for all these years. And many of us grew up with it, you know, on a coffee table or tucked away somewhere. And there it was. And Heavenly Father, if it's true that a right standing with you comes through faith alone, God, give us the courage to even lean in that direction, to begin to entertain that thought, to embrace that powerful, powerful idea. And Father, for the men and women who are gathered here or who are watching or listening, and today they're a little bit stranded in their own sea of glass, wondering, do you care? Can they ask for help? Dare they ask for help when it's a mess of their own making? Father, I pray that you would take the words that we've spoken today and take them deep into their heart so that they would know, yes, they can call out to the Lord their God who loves them anyway. And if a good earthly father would never allow their child to be stranded in a situation like that, our heavenly Father certainly would not. So give us the wisdom to know what to do with what we've just heard and the courage to do it. And we pray all of these things in Jesus' name. Amen.